Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or black forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? What?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
Hello, I'm Umar Fagan, I'm K Fagan, alongside Ian McNally, and we're here today to talk about Atomic Blonde, which is the brand new Charlize Theron movie. It's based on a graphic novel by Anthony Johnston called The Colder City, and this one's directed by David Leitch, who was the uncredited director of John Wick, co-director of John Wick, and he's also heading up Deadpool 2. And yeah, I know.
He's
got this look on his
face.
Eyes just went wide. Yes, he's the one who's been put in charge of Deadpool 2 after the last director dropped out. Yeah, so this is a 80s Cold War spy thriller with Charlize Theron playing Lorraine Broughton, who's been sent to East Berlin. MI6, who's been sent to Berlin, East and West Berlin, to search for this MacGuffin, which is essentially this list that supposedly can expose all of the spies on every side.
Yeah, it's like an earlier version of the one that Tom Cruise stole in the first Mission Impossible.
Correct. It's the knock list,
exactly.
Right? And essentially that is the story. She meets up with James McAvoy, who plays a spy that has gone native.
Yeah, he's the station agent for Berlin.
Yeah, he plays David Percival. And the movie also stars John Goodman, who plays Emmett Kurzweil, and Sophia Boutella, who plays a French spy in Berlin. Right?
Eddie Marsden. Marsden is a man who wants to defect, and always great Toby Jones is one of our superiors.
That's right.
Even James Faulkner. James Faulkner is like the face of England these days.
He
himself
is.
And Toby Jones together are like the White Cliffs of Dover.
In all cinema.
Yeah.
Now, the trailer for this movie can be quite misleading because you watch the trailer and you're expecting a female-led John Wick.
Jane Wick, I think, was the subtitles they were putting on the headlines, right?
Right. I mean, and that's quite wrong, actually, because the movie is a lot more meditative. It's a lot more of a slow burn. It's a lot more classic Cold War spy thriller because it's driven by the machinations of plot as opposed to shoot 'em ups and action sequences.
Yeah, but there are quite a few very long action sequences in it. It's almost like a slightly more serious James Bond in certain ways, in that, like, without the hokey gadgets and the world-changing plans, it is the spy on a mission and not being able to trust anybody and figuring their way out by their wits alone.
What did you think?
I don't know, because there's a couple of things that I'm not 100% sure whether they impacted my viewing of this or not. So first of all, it seems like the film was cut to ribbons here. So there was a lot of pieces that were just missing. Any scenes with Sophia Boutella seemed very few and far between. And unlike other movies where I can't remember, this always happens, I can never remember off the top of my head which is the best example of it, because we see it occasionally. We get movies that we don't even realize have been cut. We didn't even realize Alien Covenant had been cut, for example. And there's a very well-known scene in the US and UK there that we didn't get here. In this, it's jarring. There's like huge cuts where the music jumps, not just the beat or so, like it jumps 3 or 4 bars in the music, and the characters are in a completely different setup. And I think there's a lot of plot that seems to be in there that's missing.
And I think that's the problem, right? So there are these lesbian scenes between Charlize Theron and Sophia Boutella. But of course, it's an A-list Hollywood film, and you're not going to get scenes that are that intimate anyway. It's got an 18 rating, not an R rating or an X rating. So there's only so much you're going to get. But at the same time, in these scenes, I imagine there to be a lot of dialogue that we missed out.
And they didn't, like, digitally crop it or do anything else where we could get the dialogue, or, like, I don't know, freeze frame it and look at the alarm clock for a little while we could get the dialogue.
No, it's just completely cut.
Yeah, and because of that, then that had a knock-on effect that I'm not sure was part of the film's fault or part of the censor's fault, because I never got a feeling for her character, Charlize Theron's character, at all.
Well, so here's the thing. Even without the cuts, I'm not sure if I would have a feeling for her character, and I think that was one of my biggest issues with the film. While it was beautifully shot, it had this very contemporary idea of how we see the 80s, which I quite liked. Mm. This neon and synth music.
But it wasn't over the top with that. It wasn't, I'm trying to think, it's not like Last Friday Night by Katy Perry, you know what I mean? It's not getting all those 80s cliches into one. It's like we're doing Berlin, we're doing Charlize Theron's funky 80s boots, and we're doing some neon, and we're going to keep it to a little bit of Depeche Mode. We're not going to go overboard with that.
Like, no,
it is all electronic music. We're not going to go into... We're going to play 99 Love Balloons, but we're going to play the original German version.
And while I enjoyed all of that, I have to say that none of the characters had me invested in them, because I think the movie was really focused on the plot machinations, mm-hmm. on the double crossings and the triple agents and all of these things that were going on, that I think it forgot the heart. And that was something that John Wick had tons of, even though it is a straight up shoot 'em up.
Yeah. You feel for John Wick.
You immediately feel for John Wick.
And whereas I didn't feel anything for Charlize Theron.
No.
I felt like she just looks kind of cool. And that's it.
I mean, she looks very cool.
I got more of a feeling for James McAvoy's character, even though in the end I'm not 100% sure his storyline made any sense. Like, there's some stuff that happens near the end of his story, and based upon how his tale ends, it's like, wait, if he's not the thing that you've said that I'm thinking he is, then why did he do something bad earlier? Like, is it just for himself or whatever? It doesn't seem to make sense.
So it feels like a lot of that stuff was cut out.
Maybe.
And I think we did lose a lot in the interactions between Charlize Theron and Sofia Boutella's character. There is one scene where they're both in bed, and literally we see the scene for about 3 seconds, because all Charlize Theron says is, because it's going to get me killed. And then it just cuts away to something else. And it feels like they had a long conversation before that.
Sofia Boutella says, there's something I have to tell you about David Parsifal. And then, like, they know they're being recorded. So she whispered in her ear, and I don't think you ever hear what that was.
I'm not sure if you do. I can't remember.
There's a prime example, though, that hints this might be a problem with the film. The whole story is told in flashback with a very broken down Jane telling her story to her superiors back in London, I presume. And there's a scene where, like, everything, she's telling us everything, and it's not like she's having to fill in a lot of detail. Like, you know, she's not traveling by map anywhere. It all occurs in Berlin. It's not like, and then I sat doing a stakeout for 6 hours and then the camera can go on. So there's a montage, like, she's telling the story and there's a point where she's getting something very important, and then there's a montage of her smoking and the reel-to-reel cassette player and the two guys looking at her, and it's like, this should have been in about 20 minutes earlier. Like, this should have been the setup of, like, what did you do in the first 4 hours of Berlin? It's like, well, I walked around here, I got my contacts here, I did this thing. That's when you do that montage. You don't do it when you're in the middle of the next action beats just about to appear. Some of the action I found as well, there is a big long, like,
set piece.
And it's brutal and it's long and it kind of left me cold.
Really? I found that absolutely remarkable, because I loved that scene. I loved that it was faked to look like it was one take.
Yeah.
But what I really liked about that scene was that it felt really real and raw. So unlike John Wick, which is very fantastical.
Yeah, I mean, especially the second one, Keanu Reeves gets up when he should not be getting up.
No. And this one felt like it was choreographed with Charlize Theron in mind. You know, she's fighting people who are 3 times her size, and she's not going to take them down with one punch.
No.
She's really working at it, and everyone, you know, after 5 minutes, everyone's kind of grunting and on the ground and fighting to stand up again.
Yeah, and like, they really are having trouble getting up.
Yeah, and land that last punch, and it's a real pain, and you feel her pain.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I enjoyed most about that scene. Also, there's another great fight scene early on in the film, and it plays to this whole idea of how an MI6 agent would fight if she was a woman and not a man fighting people 3 times her size. She grabs a piece of hose.
And she uses it for the whole battle, yeah.
Correct. And she uses these big guys' momentum and size against them.
And I think they say at the beginning she's an expert in evasion and escape, right?
Yes, exactly.
And that's like, that plays really nicely into that. I did like that. But she's kind of cold through it. You don't even have the, like, it's it's the Jason Bourne. It's more Jane Bourne than Jane Wick.
And that ties into what you said earlier about just not being able to connect or care for her character, right?
Yeah, and it's a criticism of her before that a lot of people try to do that up-close work, but it's primarily Paul Greengrass, right, and Matt Damon that made that work. While I liked the individual actions in the fight scenes, the camera work I found supremely distracting because they're doing a thing where, like, okay, Jane's in the middle of frame. We're going to run over behind her and turn around to look back over her shoulder while a guy comes in from outside. Then we're going to go across him and then turn around again. And that gives us a quick turn to hide the edit in, to hide the cut in. But then we're going to go back and then we're going to follow through into the next room. That's cool the first three or four times. He does it a lot, and then he does it in the car, and in the car, it's really bad. There's some really bad effects work or compositing work between Eddie Marsden and Charles Theron in the car and what's going on outside it. And the music, the radio is going on and off as well, whether it's like coming from, it's diegetic from somebody else's car or it's in their car. It's not really clear. And like I said earlier, there's an action that James McAvoy's character takes in that scene where I don't understand why that sets up what goes on after that, you know, why he does a certain thing.
So I think this is definitely a movie that I'm going to have to watch again to work out all of these plot points. Because one of the things I did like about the film was how, I guess you could call it subtle, was how subtle it was in the way it handled these double-crossing, double agents, right? Where there would be these quiet moments where characters would change accents. And it wasn't because of bad acting. It actually played a part in who they were in the movie. There was also moments where certain characters would switch between talking German and Russian and there would be no subtitles. And I think that was intentional.
You think so?
Oh, no, because I think it's intentional only because in the comic book, they don't translate the German and the Russian because it's implied that she's not very good at German.
But at the very end of it, there's a scene that happens in Russian that kind of pays off the whole movie. There's no subtitles for that at all.
Oh, was there not? I may have been reading the BM subtitles.
Ah, you probably were.
I was.
Like, I kind of got like, there's a mention of a comrade, a certain name that is kind of running through this film. It's also another thing where it's not really clear. Like, there's a mole somewhere and you're not trying to figure out who it is. And it didn't make sense to me that, because it's one of those things where something similar to Ocean's 11 of those where those tricks only work if you can sell every step of it.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, I'll have to look that up again, because that was the kind of conceit that happened in the comic book as well, where they wouldn't translate the German or they wouldn't translate the Russian. It was quite interesting.
Because there was BN and Chinese subtitles when I watched it.
That's right. Okay, so maybe that's a mistake on the part of the translators and subtitlers, right? But no, I thought it was very interesting. They utilized very interesting methods to move the plot forward with those accents and the use of language. I thought was quite cool.
I just wish I knew what the Russians were on about the whole time. One thing I did like a lot was the way that it weaves through the 1989 fall of the Berlin Wall. That was very clever, but I thought that could have been used more.
Yes, because it runs in the background.
Yeah.
As they state very clearly at the beginning of the film, this is not that story.
Yeah, and they spend so much time. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of that makes me worried for Deadpool 2, because this is not that story. It's this kind of cool thing, which does not jive with the character of Charlize Theron at all. Like, it's not, it seems like this doesn't, like, even has that 80s noisy computer font at the beginning. Like,
yes, it does.
It doesn't need those. It's not Deadpool. It just needs literally, like, a flat font on Her Majesty's Secret Service playing at the beginning. It literally could be that. It's a spy movie.
That also feels like a leftover from the subtitles in John Wick, right?
Yeah.
The kind of cool, texty things he was trying to do with that. This movie is also another film that carries on the recent tradition of pop scoring. They use lots of 80s music.
Yeah.
You mentioned 99 Luftballons. What I did enjoy was
There's two versions.
I liked when they used the second cover of it. So this was something that I found interesting. They use covers of popular 80s songs as well in this film. And I thought that added to the contemporary 80s feel, this idea of how we look back at the 80s in nostalgia, right?
Yeah, because no one had stupid shoulder pads.
No, nobody did.
She was
incredibly fashionable.
Oh, yes.
Throughout this movie.
And timeless fashionable. Like, it wasn't super 80s. Nothing was super 80s.
No, there's
maybe that white plastic Mac at the beginning, but that'll about it.
There's also one point in this film where she goes, I wish I knew you'd call the police on me. I would have dressed differently.
Yes.
Which is a great little line. And, you know,
she does love her knee-high boots.
She does love her knee-high boots. And man, she looks good in those knee-high boots. No, Charlize Theron is just incredibly amazing in this film. I can't say enough about how
I think
versatile she was as an action hero.
Yeah, but like, again, there was nothing behind the eyes for that character for me. I'm really impressed with the action here, but like, this could have been anybody, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't getting any anguish. I wasn't getting any conflict. I wasn't getting any, like, oh, dear, I'm stuck in this situation from her. I was just getting her looking cool and neon with the blonde hair having... Did she have a smoke? Maybe she didn't have a smoke. I can't remember if she had a smoke.
It's interesting you say that, because I think that was a similar problem with the comic book. The comic book is in stylized black and white. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem with having a comic book in stylized black and white with a lot of shadow and such is that you don't necessarily recognize all of the characters all the time. And you have to pay very close attention to who is who.
That can be problematic.
And it was problematic when I was reading the comic book because I found myself flipping back and forth trying to work out who was who. And it's funny that that's carried through on screen as well with a certain...
All the Russians are interchangeable.
Just look the same, right? Yeah. And I think with a certain shallowness of characterization, it kind of carried through on screen as well.
Yeah, I didn't know it was in black and white because I can very clearly imagine that fringe and her looking beautiful on the page and like a page of just like Charlize, a still of Charlize Theron looking at the camera with the box in the corner explaining her thoughts. Gets across more than what you get in this movie about what this character wants and needs and thinks.
For me, this is not a simple movie to like or dislike. There was so much about this movie that I liked. There were so many things that left me cold, like yourself. And I think I'm going to have to watch it again, but not in a Malaysian cinema. Here's the thing. In all good conscience, I cannot recommend you watch it in Malaysian cinemas.
It's confusing.
Because I think you'd get lost, right? And the both of us were lost, and we were paying really close attention to what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, and I also need to find out whether the panic that set in over Deadpool 2 is warranted or not, because if with the cut bits put back in again, it's still mad, that doesn't make me very... secure about Deadpool 2.
No, it doesn't fill you with any confidence at
all. No.
But let us know what you think if you've seen Atomic Blonde. It's showing in cinemas right now. I'm on at Umar Pagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
That's right. Tweet us and give us your thoughts. Also, check us out on Facebook, which is facebook.com/@themoviesmy. We post all of our podcasts there. And, you know, there's a pretty vibrant conversation going on between all you listeners. So keep that going, too. You've been listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or black forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.